Friday, November 6th, correct? 8:15 in the morning, and Commissioner Greg Sidell, and I called a special workshop to gain a better understanding of the historic preservation ordinance, called on short notice. We did get our 48-hour notice in.
And it's posted on the website and on the board.
Yep, so it's understandable that certain people couldn't make it, that given the short notice and given it's the middle of the work, the morning of the workday. It's been a long week for me, if you will, I was in Chipley yesterday, back here today, so. But I have met with several folks on it and gone through it, and, you know, basically what I was trying to gain is a better understanding of the impact to the residents that it could have, what areas really would qualify as a historic district, given the language that's currently in there. And so one of the, and I'll just jump right into this item, because this is kind of, you know, what I'm trying to talk about. But it was the local historic district qualifications, section 58457, section 2.
Page 10?
Yes, page 11 is where section 2 is. Right, the local historic.
Nah, I got that one, too, but it doesn't matter, go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, I'm on 10, too. I have the ordinance that has the header on it about the anonymous pictures, so this is the way.
So if we're talking sections, we're talking sections.
Right.
Two, the red one, is that the two?
Yeah.
It's on page 10.
Yes, black and white. But one of the changes here was setting forth that at least 50% of the homes in the proposed district are individually designated historic homes or contributing homes. And I took the data that we currently had, and I mapped it, and that's what I had sent. And what you find is that in these proposed districts, that, you know, really, if you just look at Gulfview Terrace and just those homes right there, that's the only one. There may be one other that actually meets the 50%.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And so I guess that's where I'm trying to, and that was my question that I've been trying to get answered, is of these other homes, because we did the study 15 years ago. So we do have in another section where it says to qualify, your home has to be 50 years old. And so now we have a whole, and looking at these maps, Dory.
Greg, let me make sure what you have. This is what I was asking for.
Well, can you tee up how you created these are not city maps.
Correct.
Just so I can get it all.
Yeah, let me understand.
These are not city maps. I did not.
Dory's not been involved in that.
Condone creating city district maps.
Creating an impossible criteria.
I did not want to create maps that the city did, because I did not want there to be an impression that the city was condoning a historic district.
Are these similar to what Bill
Sullivan? Right, or proposing them, right?
Are they similar to what Bill Sullivan was looking at, those areas he was looking at?
Yeah, what these are, by the way, is I went in and I looked at it and I said, okay, well, what could be a possible historic district given this the data from the 2000 study that was updated. We cross-referenced that with the Orange County Property Appraiser's Office. And I do have a document from the Office of the Jury, which I'll send also.
Thank you.
I thought it was going to be on these sheets. I didn't get a chance to do the sheets.
That's okay.
You're
on the go.
And so, so what you see is, I mean, just through the Orland Manor example, I think they don't quite meet 50% based on the information we previously had. And that shape that's drawn in there is what I've drew in based on the criteria. So these are
legally contiguous properties.
And some of it I fudged a little bit because, you know, sometimes it says you can't go across the other side of the street if you can, sometimes. But, like, you know, here, for example, the houses are facing in, so it's not facing the other street. So they're, you know, these aren't perfect. This is just to get an idea to see the feasibility of the ordinance that we're talking about.
So you're saying the gray properties are homes that, in the last 15 years have become 50 years old?
Based on the property appraiser website saying the year the structure was built. So, and this is the 2014, So for example, I know there's a few houses that were added to the list, and there's a few houses that were not there anymore. And so it's a, so it's the point in time is 2014, if you will. But then it's also never been field proof.
Right. So, you didn't go out there and look to make sure it had been maybe remodeling there.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it's simply the dates of the houses. And that's why the so it was kind of, so then it's like, well, what's the qualifications for these homes to be contributed? And so, you know, that's what I was really trying to get a better grasp of. And then is it also, you know, Dory, you have been involved in this much more than I have, but that 50%, when did that come about? Was that something that was
that was proposed by the community group, and the Historic Preservation Board agreed with their proposal, and that was added, I'd say, as part of the amendments that were done in the last 5 months.
Yeah, it used to be 60%. In the old ordinance, that was 60%.
And it didn't say legally contiguous, so it didn't say.
Well, the old ordinance didn't require any percentage. The one that's on the books now has no percentage. I'm looking at it right here, and I don't see that percentage was ever deleted or added. So I don't believe that, and I'll go get my land development code, but I don't believe that. That's the thing to me, was that the ordinance was never in there.
Here's the current ordinance.
Okay.
That's the one.
Oh,
the
market.
Right.
Yeah, I guess.
Sometimes when they mark it up, they... I'm so happy that you did this. If that's been my argument to people from the side, is that we have created an ordinance that is actually harder to create a district than it ever was.
Well, and for this, though, I don't know that it is. I mean, that's what, you know, because of all these houses, when you look at the gray, it certainly looks like all these places would qualify.
Yeah. I assume that this is
our community code.
What do you think they do?
Correct. 56, number 2.
Well, the gray parcels are the parcels
I'm not
that
seeing
are 50 years old.
Yeah, significant concentration maybe represented.
Okay,
it's a maybe.
Are they contributing? It's, you know, age doesn't make it contributing. It's not one of the criteria. It's just a standard that has to be met before you can even talk about it.
Right.
Under in Muni Code, under the current ordinance, thank you. It says a significant concentration may be represented by 60% of the site's building structures or objects to be contributed. I'm seeing where we deleted that in here. We're saying instead of a may, you must be, you shall be, have at least 50% of the homes.
So they had some ambiguous language before.
Correct.
They were trying to clarify. I think the point was they were trying to clarify it.
But there's a difference between may and shall.
Yes.
And so now we're saying you may have had.
Yeah.
Where are
so,
you?
So my page 10, probably your page 9.
It's section.
You must meet. It's under.
Or I'm sorry. 456. Division 3, 58-456-2A.
Yes, I see it.
So we took it from an ambiguous may be represented to at least 50% of the site's buildings and so forth.
And we increased it to 2 criteria.
Correct.
And then we said it needed to be legally contiguous, so we added a lot of criteria.
And so, Dory, I guess my question would then become, if we were to, I kind of, you know, me personally as an engineer, you know, I'd like to get all the data and then make a decision on the data. In this case, I don't feel that I have current data. But how big an effort is it to get that current data? And is it something that's, you know, you're looking at, I don't know what type of contract it would be, but...
It would be an update of the whole Florida Master Site File Survey work, which would be a very concentrated effort to look at every home. You know, if we went in 2001 or 2000 when that survey was done, right, it would have been homes that were built in the 50s.
Right.
Well, now in 2014, 50 years has changed that needle to the 60s. So we've expanded the housing stock to look at, as well as you've got to really look at every property.
And nobody is contributing.
And exactly. And I think that effort, I don't know what type of time period that would be, but the only way it would work well is if there was a lot of transparency in the scope and bringing in an expert who knows how to look citywide at this effort. And so I think it would be a contract. I think we'd have to go out for RFP and bring in a study to have somebody do that.
Okay, and then so the other side of that question, though, because there's a lot of debate is ranch homes are built in that time period, are they really historic? Is to have a point in time, which would say when the study was done, as these were considered a contributing homes, and use the 1950 date. That I know, because the projects I deal with, anything that's 50 years older, we take a look at. But is it like from a city perspective? This is,
how old are you, Randy?
And then here's his birthday the
other day.
All right. So it is. It's almost like if you take 65, that's the first. That's half the since the city was developed. And so when we talk about what's historic for the city, well, this is this is half as old as this.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of the questions here because every year more homes get added to this list as you go.
The comments that this ordinance could affect every home in Winter Park is absolutely right. This could eventually affect every home in Winter Park. Over time, it's going to. You lose some, you win some, some get built, some don't get built. I would tell you, Commissioner, that the 50% is based on the national historic register of the National Register of Historic Places criteria, but certainly if we were going to do a study or do a survey, you could set the survey parameters, but to really have a historic ordinance that meets that criteria, we've already somewhat changed that criteria by expanding the four contributing elements to seven. We've already kind of broken that up a little bit. But this is the city's ordinance. If the commission wanted to have a survey and look at homes that were 65 and less, I think you still do need to look at that 50-year window, but that would just perhaps be something we could decide if you should really look at the study itself. I mean, it's hard to tell because I think the results, you need to see the whole results of an updated survey,
right,
to see what it says. You may have an incredible home that was built in 1964 that was by an architect of standing and merit, and you would want to put that on as a historic place because that might be one of a kind structure that needs to be included. So I think I understand the reason why the 50 years is in place, but when you go through and look at your survey results, and to me what the community has missed is letters were sent out to the contributing homes back in 2000, 2001 when they were made contributing homes. Whether those owners are still owning those homes or they have sold them, certainly those letters aren't sent out every year. We don't re-notify people. So there's an awful lot of people who never either forgot or never knew that they were contributing property. Unless they own the whole old home and understand this rule, they'll get that.
Greg, your data here talks 70 to 80. It doesn't talk to 80.
You looked at the property appraiser's website and...
Yeah, when you say that, we have the data. Mm-hmm. So from 2014, that's what we have.
Right, and then we have a map of all the contributing properties on the comp plan, but we've never... And that map, I don't believe, has been updated since 2009 to take off homes that were demolished or not demolished.
And how many were demolished?
I don't have.
Yeah, we did, Dory. I mean, basically what we did then was we cross-referenced the date built. So if you had it on the list, but the date built was newer than 1950, mm-hmm. and we said it was demolished.
Right.
So we looked at that, and you know, that shows up. You can see some of that here in the interlocking area where these red dots would be have the things that were on there that aren't anymore.
And there's a few. There's not, you know, that exact number. Again,
for some reason I had my mind not totally.
Right, but again, this is not doing any field verification. This is just the data that's there. So I don't want to get into those specific numbers. But the you know, looking at some of these areas, like the interlocking one that's shown, I mean, based on the current list, there's only 32%. And then if you looked at the Gulfview Terrace, kind of as the whole, and you can see how I kind of drew this shape. The, you know, that house is on Palmer, so
well,
kind
you
of
have all
similar.
Hundreds of those Palmer.
Yeah, I just
want to get a copy of all. Actually, I think we're going to mail it to you, and you can send it out to all.
Yeah, and then so what we call this option B, you know, that you have 47% where you have one or two other partials qualified, and then yes, those people.
And all of these districts are based on a voter residence.
Right.
At the end of the day, they're an approval by the city commission to create the districts. I mean, the residents could vote, and if the city commission still had doubts about the districts or whether the design standards, design guidelines that were being discussed were, mm-hmm. were appropriate for non-contributing or non-contributing homes, at the end of the day, the city commission still has the ultimate authority to approve the district.
Right.
The vote is just simply moving it forward.
Right. And that's new, right?
No, you've always had, the city commission has always had the authority to, always must have the authority to approve the district. The vote, you know, certainly the approval rating, the approval vote is the one piece that's changed from 2/3 to 58%. And
right.
and the committee, the citizens group have recommended a 50+1 simple majority as a compromise. The HPD did not have a meeting of minds on that. Half wanted 67%, half wanted a simple majority. Bill Siegel, as chair, had represented kind of taking 50 and 67 and coming in the middle and created 58%,
right.
knowing it's a policy decision.
And knowing the criteria that we've established is so much more complicated than we ever talked about. I mean, to me, the percentage almost becomes a non-item if you set up a criteria that's in the first place. And I guess, Greg, my question to you is, how would these districts, how many of them actually would meet the criteria?
Well, with the current, there's a couple of them. I mean, you know, I look specifically to me, Orwin Manor is one that, at the moment, you know, with the line the way I drew it, didn't meet the 50% criteria.
And I think that's one of the areas that's probably we're most interested in becoming a.
Right, but you could create a smaller area that possibly could.
Yeah, no, that's what I looked at, Dory. I mean, that was kind of the, you know, this has 36%, and you know, looking at the criteria of having to go both sides of the street, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't see any area where even a street qualified based on mm-hmm. what we had.
But there's an awful lot of gray. I mean, almost every property in there
is gray.
So it became 50 in the last 15 years.
Right. So the point that yes. This could become a historic district if these are the qualifying homes, mm-hmm. and that's why I was asking
if they're contributing.
I mean, I definitely feel like one of the first things we do, regardless of what happens with this ordinance, is we must update this. It's not like it's time, and 15-year-old data is really difficult data to continue to use to make evaluations on.
Agreed.
I mean, I sent a letter out to a friend of mine, and she called me up and said, my house was built in 1991. I'm not sure why I have this letter. I don't know.
Right. And then, you know, my neighborhood was what I looked at. And, you know, based on this carved-up line that I did, now see, now Essex, these houses face Lakeview. So you could argue that the way I've kind of drawn it.
Cheap.
Well, that's how I want to say it.
It's engineering judgment.
Sure.
And I just have to explain it to the permit agency.
It says legally continues. All the judgment on the language.
Well, these are all Lakeview addresses. So, but anyway, I mean, mine, I was right at 51 because my neighborhood. So it was kind of, but then if you look at the houses that are older, which mine is included in that now, but I've updated it and I don't know.
Well, the county is contributing.
Right.
Well, that was the other criteria that makes this even more complex, frankly, is it says 50% must be contributing or doesn't be.
Right. Must be.
And then 50% of the 20% of people who are interested must live in one of those houses.
Right. Well, and then this is Osceola District. I drew that one up, but that one meets very well. So that's what I was trying to get at the end of the day, what we're doing, what areas is really affecting, but looking at the additional 15 years from the properties that cannot qualify, you know, it certainly opens those up to you guys.
Sorry, Commissioner, it doesn't say they have to live in them, it says they have to be the owners. It can't be somebody renting them.
Yeah,
it must
be the owners.
And I had the question, what do you do when husband and wife disagree? Who gets the vote?
Each house gets one vote.
That's right, including the LLCs.
Actually, the historic preservation board talked about that. It's the way we work, and each house does get a vote, so.
So the house has to figure it out.
The house has to figure it out.
It's a beauty.
Fair enough. Yes. And I apologize because the copy I had brought with me on my trip, I left in my truck, which is, or in my briefcase, which is at my.
Yeah, great. Because you called this meeting, I'm just going to sit here very silently until you give me an opportunity to speak. But when you're ready, I'd like to go through a few things with you before we leave outside.
Yeah, well, what I was more wanted to do here today, Commissioner, was to talk about the questions on the ordinance and understand the ordinance. And not necessarily get into how I feel about it.
That's fine. Yeah.
So if you've got some questions on the ordinance, feel free to. Go ahead. This is my biggest one, and I know it has to be my.
Did you get an answer to when you go to get an answer?
Yeah, I'm not sure what your question was and what your answer was. So if I'm.
Okay,
early this morning, I want to make sure I understand.
Yeah, the question basically was that. For these, anywhere there where there might be a historic district, based on the current data that we have, that data can be updated, and yes, additional homes can become contributing homes and qualify based on the information that we have. This map showing that these are older than 50 years old, so therefore they can, but they haven't been evaluated.
As to know whether they're contributing.
Right. Right, and then that contributing process, you know, it had to meet two criteria, Dory?
Two, yes.
Of the,
And that's new. Two criteria is new.
Capital definitions has to meet two criteria.
Right, and so for additional homes to be contributing homes, they've got to be evaluated to meet that criteria, and so it was kind of. Because I was trying to, looking at everything on the map, put it together to see where these proposed districts might be and how they might be configured. And so that's what, knowing that I don't have the answer to my question because we don't have the study done. So I can't, there's no finite number. And so I think that's the, and then Dory, if we do the study straight away, the other parts of the ordinance with regard to demolition, those ones would now be added to that.
And some would be taken off.
Exactly.
I mean, some houses that we think are contributing may not be contributing any longer, or they may be gone. So I think the survey is very much in flux because we're not, Lindsay did in 2013, Lindsay looked at the survey and she did look at the homes that have been demolished, but like I tell you, from 13 to now, there are more homes that have been demolished that may be contributing or not contributing. So I think that it would really, it's hard for me to sit here and give you a very educated yes on what the survey would really want to say.
Right.
How, can you tell me how much it cost and how long it would take?
No, I have no.
You don't have any feel?
I have no feel for it. I could go back, right, exactly.
I could tell you how many parcels.
2001. We know the last one was roughly over 400 and slightly over 500 parcels were in the last one. So, and that was all resources, including things like bridges. I mean, a resource is not just a home. It could be a bridge. It can be a structure.
It would be limited.
You really don't want to do that because I think in some ways you want to know what other historic resources you have in the community. You know, we limited it to homes. The golf course wouldn't be designated. And that's kind of important. Yes. That golf course stay on our master site box. So I think it's helping.
It's part of it. Is the golf course part of the National District?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Yes.
So, Commissioner, in answer to your question, we can find out how much we spent on the 2009 study.
What are you thinking?
Well, out to Park Avenue, I was part of the airline. It's not in Park Avenue.
But the golf course is got
some
designation.
It doesn't make it myself.
Right.
I don't
know what it's going to do. I don't
think it's going to be in the airline.
I think it's just
Dory, is that some? But is that something to have some kind of idea Monday?
Yeah.
As a range, you know, this could be X dollars to Y dollars, and this could take X amount of time to Y amount of time.
I don't know why the time difference would be any different from what was in 2001 to 2004.
Okay.
Right. I can find out that timing of what it took in the 2001 study, and then you know we know how much that one was, and we can
it would be it would alleviate a lot of concerns.
It's an option to keep a technical ordinance to have that data, or table the district portion to have.
Well, Randy, where I'm going with this is there's people that say don't pass the historic preservation ordinance because I don't want to have my home become a district. Well, today, your home can be a district, and based on the criteria, maybe 60%, that doesn't really matter. So any of these districts we talk about, you can be voted in.
They're easier now than
right.
They will be.
Right. That you have more risk of being in a district right now.
That's exactly the point.
There's two ways. I mean, there's more hoops to jump to get to a vote.
Yes.
But then the vote, if you get there, it's like the bar's a little lower.
But by the time you move,
which are not more hoops to get there.
And there are a number of things.
Yeah, I mean, if it's based on this, I think there was only two or three of these areas that would qualify based on the criteria.
And there are the people that have already come out and said that they're not interested. There's a lot of things. Anyway, I'm glad that, thank you for running this data. I don't have these kind of resources. I appreciate it. And certainly, this is the kind of data we always should have in regard to make decisions.
I disagree. I disagree that the city produced this data.
Oh, no.
To be honest, I mean, I appreciate Mr. Seidel's effort.
I'm thrilled because I need to data because I'm like Bradley. I want to understand. And to me, when I read the ordinance, the feeling I came away with is that we had made the criteria for coming forward to establish a district so much more stringent that talking about the percentage was a red herring, quite frankly, is the way I came away from this. And I do have a few things very, very important to you that I make sure we all understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, the way I'm reading this, in the past, an owner, a commissioner, and it never should have been a commissioner, it always should have been the commission, I think, but it said the owner, a commissioner, or the historic preservation board can elevate a property for at least discussion and consideration. It said that you couldn't move forward toward finally doing something unless you had been able to engage the owner. Now, I think what I understand is it's saying only the owner can even bring it up for discussion.
Correct.
Is that correct? So that will make it very, very difficult for a commission or a board to say, this is a really fine piece of property, let's go and engage on that, which I think we might use, not be able to do that. But I just want to make sure I understand that that's what it says now. There are no definitions in here of design guidelines, and while I know they will be different for every district, I do think we need a definition of the term, which at least says that they're professionally prepared, they're illustrated, something that defines what they are. I think I understand that the criteria we put in for qualifications says they have to have interest in historic preservation. There's no requirement for knowledge. I think that, yeah, let's look at the language on 58446.
The membership, correct. This was.
Membership is.
Of the board.
Right, what page is that on?
I have seven. You guys might have one on me.
I think I have the one you have, so that's good.
Yes, and that was one of the questions I had. Does this get us the board that we get the funding there?
We're going to try it, yes. I think it does.
I think the board would have it for you.
The board membership was a major source of conversation amongst the Historic Preservation Board and the ability to apply for CLG, whether we wanted to be CLG, what that meant. After looking at the state requirements, after looking at what other cities have, we're going to apply given this criteria, should this go forward.
We're going to
see where we're at. You know, under the old housekeeping amendments that the HPB had done back in 2012-13, they had a very extensive list of board memberships. I think that this list was a compromise between really having seven very specific designated board seats to having two seats that were very specifically designated, feeling like local architects certainly makes a great deal of sense on the board, and then allowing whoever would be versed in local history could be an existing board member or could be somebody who would just like
to talk about. Well, there's one word in here that I was interested in making sure I understand is where it says, members of the HPB shall have a demonstrated civic pride and an interest in historic preservation, and then knowledge and mature judgment to act just in general. So if nothing in here requires them to have any knowledge of historic preservation. Was that the intent?
It was to continue to allow engaged citizens to apply for the board and serve on the board.
So that was the intent.
That was the intent.
No knowledge of historic. Okay, and then the next question I had is the very last part of that sentence. It says all must be city residents.
Yes.
Now, having been the commissioner that fought tooth and nail to make all of our boards city residents and failed, I believe that if we leave that last phrase in there that says must be city residents, we've now created an internal inconsistency with our land use codes, because our land use codes currently say that they don't say they have to be residents. I would love for all of our boards to have to be residents, but I lost that battle. So I'm not sure why it was interjected.
Would you have something to say they have to be residents?
I thought it had more to do with the like on the utility advisory board, we serve people
but then also
having civil engineers that if you combine with the city structure, you may not.
Yeah,
right. And so
I think the HPB felt like this was a really good requirement to have them all be city residents, that it was of city interest.
I think all of our boards should be all city residents.
We've had three attorneys look at this, and I'll sign this has been in there all along, and I don't know.
Well, they don't know the fight that we went through to make all our boards.
That is inconsistent.
Okay. This isn't it. I just want to kind of move along.
No, I have a quick follow-up on that, though. Is it because there are experts that do historic designation now for the DMT, and is, would it be to have that person on the historic preservation board, if we could have someone like that?
Okay.
But, and so that's because, like, we have civil engineers on the utility advisory board to help with the utilities. Now that there's experts in this field that do these studies and do these reports, and there's a few here in town. That, is that something that they gave any consideration to?
I can tell you that the topic of the board membership was the topic for a very, very, very long time. And this was a compromise. I mean, going back to a document that was done in 2014, there were you know, expertise asked for in architecture history, architectural history, archaeology, urban planning.
That came directly out of this.
Correct. And it didn't go anywhere. The Historic Preservation Board felt that in order to get a good, compassable board, that this membership was appropriate. Now, any other, you know, certainly as a policy, you can ask for or require any additional members.
Sure.
This was really a compromise to...
Right. Well, I just want to understand what we have here so that I know
right.
what condition something
is. And that's the, under the historic preservation board, this was the compromise that I had.
If we go down to page 8, number 4 of the criteria under 58 and 456, we took this directly out of the National Register, so what it says is that represent the work of a master. And I'm assuming at the local level that it would be appropriate to expand that to a locally recognized architect or craftsman. I'm not sure if a master has a specific definition within the historic preservation world. That's just a question. I think that may be a little too restrictive on the provincial part. On the next page, certainly, down under designation procedures, here it says the HPC or city commission or a member can bring it forward, right? That's there. And I will be probably making an amendment to that just so that you know, offering an option, just so that we can bring it forward for discussion. I agree that the way it was written previously, you have to have the concurrence of the property forward with the designation, but I don't want us not to be able to talk about it and figure out ways to encourage that property owner to want to move forward. And on page 10, I do believe that the criteria we've created is going to make it almost impossible for most places to be in the district.
Is there a specific criteria you think is overreaching?
I have to say the original language was a little easier.
I know it's easier to
just strike it out.
No. I'm saying original language made it easier to go to get it to a vote, but it make it. Some of these criteria seem to be important. So why put the neighborhood through something if it's not going to qualify anyway? Because it, you know, doesn't meet. Should a district with only 25% of the homes be contributing be a district, and
that's going to be settled pretty easy when the petition comes in.
Sure.
And staff
right.
does the very
right. She said she
and the question is, the question is, what I think I understand you asking, what is the one criteria that you set up that's made it feel like it's unreasonable, and that's a good question, and this data will help us understand that. Right. And the question becomes, maybe it's not 50%. Maybe that number is too high. If we look at the data that he's put together here, every one of them has a percentage on it. And I just didn't look at what that was.
Yeah, no, and most of them, I don't have the specifics, but there's probably two or three that meet and the rest don't.
And maybe those are the two or three that he really cares about. And
right.
Maybe that's adequate. I haven't studied his name yet. I'll not do that.
Right.
And maybe we can work on
that.
You can figure out that answer.
Yeah, no, I'll provide the source of the data and the remaining so they can share this with us.
The next thing that was a concern to me, and I want to make sure I understand it, is I know that in College Corridor, what I was told was that the city actually help with the design guidelines, maybe even the way of financing. And now, when I read this, what I read here is that it says indeed under local historic districts, under 2B on page 10, it says prior to consideration by the board. And then if you go down that sentence on the bottom, like the bottom of that same paragraph says, if so, the city shall prepare a historic designation report, which shall analyze and report on the design guidelines to include district alteration criteria. So if the staff is only going to analyze them, that assumes that someone has already paid for them and brought them forward, and it says prior to consideration by the board. That sounded to me very excessive. It sounds like not only must you get 20% of the people, 50% of those people have to live in a designated house or a contributing property, and oh, by the way, you've got to go get with all of your neighbors, come up with design guidelines, pay for them, bring them to the city prior to consideration by the Historic Preservation Board. That may be over the top, because I think that cost was, I want to say $10,000, maybe the city can buy, maybe the neighborhood did buy. And the question is, is that fair to say to them, or can we just discuss the guidelines and then prepare the guidelines once they get further along and they know something is going to happen?
And I don't disagree with what you're saying, other than I think when people vote, they need to know the guidelines are going.
Yeah, they at least need to know the written criteria, maybe not illustrated.
It's assuming that when the design guidelines get done, I mean, we've always required that there be design guidelines to discuss, you know, going back to the original ordinance, the city shall facilitate conferences with the property manager and the nominated district to discuss the following design guidelines. We have to have, I think you have to start out with a concept, an idea. I mean, how illustrative they get after they kind of get fleshed out a little.
I just want to be aware, because I've got some important things. I don't want to get bogged down in this and not get to the things that I think are important, because I don't think this is really important. I just think that it's making the formation of a district far more expensive and more complicated for us.
But in this case, couldn't we use the College Quarter as a starting point, and then the community could mark that up?
I think Virginia Heights is much less.
So you could use the Virginia Heights one. So they could have both. So there's a couple drafts.
Based on the National Register of Historic Place
guidelines.
I guess my point is they're not starting from scratch. They have two
guidelines. Standardized guidelines that people can start with.
Well, I'm just hoping that we fix this so that they have to bring forward the concept and maybe the written list of things that they want, but not necessarily bring you a set of guidelines for you to analyze prior to their ability to go to the Historic Preservation Board. That just seems a little stretched.
Can I also say that I think the HPB wants to be able to flesh these out into more rulemaking after the city takes some measure on them? I think the design guidelines.
You should be careful what this ordinance says, because the ordinance is going to lead people to how they are labeled. If you go to page 12, and this is throughout this document, and I understand the intention, but number 7 at the top up there says the city shall notify all property owners. And over in this document, it has the city doing notification of property owners that's well in excess of anything we do for comprehensive plan changes, for zoning changes. And Randy, my question to you is, what's the cost of something like that? It sounds like to me that we may have gone overboard and it may become extremely costly for the city. So I'd like you guys to look at that.
I don't think it's real costly since it's, I mean, it's a defined group of people sending it to.
If you're good with it, I'm good with it.
I mean, how big can the district be? 500 homes?
And it's 6,000 to the city binders.
Right. And you're mailing them three times.
Right. And assuming I'm able, this may be just a postcard
We can put it on the website, and maybe they can attend the meeting.
It was really it very, very, very clear over and over and over again that we were not being
I understand.
This was not a two-week process.
I understand why you did it. I'm just saying, have somebody look at the cost of this and make sure. On guidelines for review on 58469, this is very important to me. We used to have language in the purpose that talked about keeping any infill development harmonious with the community. Harmonious is not the best legal word, maybe you should have said compatible. But now, if I look at this, read this sentence real carefully. 58469 guidelines for review says that to preserve, okay, it shall be the intent to preserve the exterior historic characteristics of a landmark or resource of district and promote maintenance, restoration, and adaptive reuse and compatible contemporary designs which are harmonious. Now look what it says. It only says it needs to be harmonious with the exterior architecture and the landscape. It doesn't say anything about setbacks, mass, scale.
So this is in the existing ordinance.
No, I understand. No, I understand, but it's a huge hole in these. And the existing ordinance used to have in the purpose that it had to be harmonious, and we took that out. So now we're left with just this. And I just want to make sure that if our intention is that infill development must be harmonious with architecture and landscape, that's what it says now. But it doesn't say anything about harmonious or compatible with mass scale and setbacks. And I think that's really critical. So, you know, we don't need to discuss it a whole lot. If I'm wrong, I'd like you to call me, let me know, and tell me, show me where in this ordinance it talks about compatibility.
Yeah, but I mean, doesn't interior architectural address that?
Well, to me, architecture is the building and the facade and the articulation, and I'm not sure that architecture has anything to do with the setbacks or, do you want to say anything?
Well, size and scale, that's probably the thing. I mean,
right, and that's what's missing.
It's like you build a mini house versus a massive house, so those are two different architectural styles. So, I mean, that's why they're, you know.
Well, all I'm saying is we have lost the wording that used to talk about.
Well, you're kind of going back to that looking at what you refer to. I mean, it talks about the beginning. Furthermore, it's the purpose of the article to strengthen the economy of the city by stabilizing and improving property values and to encourage new buildings and development that will be harmonious with existing historic buildings and districts.
Did you strike that out?
That is strictly, right. But it doesn't speak to setbacks or...
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't speak to...
And my thought was that all it should have, that word harmonious...
Okay, so you're...
This is new amendment. This is just a new thought that I'd like you to give. And if I'm wrong, let me know if it's not necessary.
Well, I kind of looked at that as, doesn't the neighborhood get to say? Like, for example, in my house is 3 foot from the property line. So if we want to come to the store and allow me to build something else that's only 3 foot from the property line, that's going to violate current setbacks from the historic district.
But if it's in your guidelines.
Right. So wouldn't those elements end up in the guidelines?
Well, that's what I'm saying. This right here talks to the other elements that are going to be in the guidelines. It talks to landscaping. It talks to harmonious exterior architecture, but no place in this ordinance do we talk to compatibility mass scale setbacks. And I just think it's an omission that we didn't need to make.
Well, can you just add what's the effect of and other items can be, right?
But I just wanted to go through it in case I'm wrong, because I don't want to make any motions that if I'm wrong, this is a question and answer here. Okay, so on the bottom of page 13, this one is rather important too. C, where it talks about the garage apartments. In the past, we had an upper limit of 1,000 square feet, and it was firm, thou shalt not exceed 1,000 square feet, and these structures do start to present mass in the neighborhood, and now it just says it's desirable. So if it's our intention that there is an upper limit, we might want to leave the 1,000 feet as the upper limit and leave the 750 as desirable, because we no longer have an upper limit of this language.
So just not strike out that
sentence. Yeah, just leave it there. And then on the next page, and I'm not sure why this went away. On page 14, where we struck out, will be deemed sufficient grounds for code enforcement to discontinue the use of the garage apartment structure as a secondary living unit. Being a secondary living unit is a privilege that they get because they're in a historic district. So if they're continuously violating the parking associated with that, it doesn't seem unreasonable that they lose that privilege.
But doesn't the center truck that they added just cover it a different way?
Well, I don't, that's, I was here when that was added, and the reasoning behind that was you can't, you can't presume that the code enforcement board is automatically going to, you can't tell the code enforcement board what they're going to do.
Right, so it just gives them a right to
do so. And you're still giving the code enforcement board the authority to decide the penalty to the property owner. We felt that this was, absolutely have a right. I mean, the code enforcement
just said we can't use the accessory.
Yeah, what if we just added at the end of the...
Something Robin did when we had a look at this before, because the issue was, the way this was proposed, it already sounds like that's the only remedy. It may not be the only remedy.
So maybe we just added at the end of that sentence, Commissioner, up to and including discontinuation of garage apartment.
Well, because it is a privilege. Yes, it's a privilege under R1 they just don't have.
So you're going to make that motion, Commissioner?
Yeah.
I can tell you, we went through this in some detail. I went through with the other attorneys that looked at this, and they felt that statement gave code compliance and the code enforcement board.
They already have that authority.
All the authority needed to make whatever they believe that
she'll be the person that would have to.
I'm okay with you bringing the suggestion. We want to clarify the confusion on plans. It doesn't say this will be the penalty. They have the right to say you can no longer use it as a living quarters.
You say including without limitation, discontinuance or fines and other penalties allowed in the city code.
Yeah, and one of the things that I'm hearing from people that are in the commission, if I can get them to talk to me about it, is on page 17, under 5479. And I'd like to fix this because I think it's misunderstanding, but the language could lead you to believe that even non-contributing properties have a hold on their demolition.
No.
That's my understanding to yours, if they do not, and that's why I'm
talking. If there's language in here that needs to be clarified,
yeah, take a look at 58479.
Did they give you a specific section? That section 58479? Well, it's designated properties or properties within historic district.
Right.
If you're in a historic district and you're a non-contributing property and your current design guidelines require you to go to the HPB, then yes, you do have a hold on your demolition permit until you go to the HPB.
Why not? Sure, they should.
Well, the current guy, we have two districts. The two districts we have now, the argument is, and the thoughts has always been, and non-contributing properties within the two, this only applies to the two districts we have. It doesn't apply to proposed districts down the road, but the non-contributing properties within those two districts are required to go to the HPD for approval to demolish.
That's what the deal with the development.
That was the whole topic.
Property or whole
tapping. Actually, that's here again.
But we don't hold them up for the 60 or 90 days. And that was the
plan. No, once the HPD gives them authority to demolish, then they follow the regular 30-day requirement under the city code for demolition.
I think that's what we need to clarify.
If the confusion is now
whether this has this 90-day-old period.
Yeah, maybe this is the wrong sentence. Maybe it's the wrong sentence. But I think what I hear you saying, Dory, is yes, they have to come before the Historic Preservation Board, but we don't put on the 60 or 90-day-old.
481 only applies to visiting properties. Okay. It does not apply to districts or designated properties.
Could you be on those listed? You also designated a historic resource to property? Would you move it in?
No. Okay. Once you're designated, you're designated. Sure. Once you're in a district, you're in a district.
Would you automatically, if you were on that list, would you automatically come off that list once you got your designation?
Yes. You'd be on a historic designation of discovering contributing properties.
Dory, if you look at that sentence under 58479A, where it says, in addition to all other provisions in determining whether or not to approve or deny an application involving the demolition of designated properties, you can't really deny a non-contributing property.
Sure they can.
I mean, the HPP can deny a non-conforming property the right to develop if they haven't brought in plans. And the reason that they can, if they haven't brought in plans of what they're planning to use the property.
That's what they did at Rollins.
No, Rollins was a contributing property, by the way. Absolutely was a contributing property. But I've seen it go both ways. But they can absolutely deny a non-contributing property if that property owner does not have plans for that property. They can absolutely, if the HPP.
Meaning they could just tear it down and leave a lot vacant, or they can.
That's what, no, under the two historic districts that we have, the design standards require a non-contributing property, if they're going to demolish, they have to also accompany that with plans of what they.
Well, then can we say that? Can we say that this criteria for denying them to tear down their property is only there if they don't have those plans with them? Because that's a problem for people. If they look at this and they see, hey, I'm a non-contributing property.
They can also deny it if those plans, they don't feel the
design criteria. Right. I mean, if those plans don't meet the design criteria, if they don't meet the design criteria within the design standards within the historic district, they could also recommend it. I mean, the issue.
Yeah. The issue within a district
is always what happens to the non-contributing property.
Right. Well, right. Well, what I'm saying is, I agree with the people I'm hearing from, and maybe we need to work on some language here that helps remove the fear and lets them know that we will not be denying you demolishing your property if you bring compliant plans forward for what you're going to do later. That's what I think I'm hearing you say.
I don't think that does work with the angst, because that's exactly what the people who are not contributing properties are fearing, that somebody's going to tell me what I can build on my own piece of property.
It goes to, in addition to all other provisions of this article, which would be the creation of design guidelines for a district.
And the next ones are pretty clear, and they'll just come up. But that's under where you extended the 60-day and 90-day, mm-hmm. and engage staff the right to. That one to me is inappropriate. And that's only because it won't be staff that's coming up with the money to fix this. It'll be the community, and I won't take their time away. We've said you're going to have 60 or 90 days, and that's just my personal opinion. Okay. Down in 58482.
Can I stop at 58481 for a second? The Florida Master Site File or the Historic Survey. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go back to the maps I put together. The maps I put together have a lot of gray on them that could be properties. Would those properties now be added to either of those lists when we move on?
Only after there's a new survey done.
Right.
If there's a new survey, then that would be the list.
And the historic survey is those properties that would be able to qualify under the National Register of Historic Places. So there may be some homes on here that could, I don't know. But yes, I would imagine if you update the survey that you're going to see not only the Florida Master Site File survey be updated, but you see the National Register of Historic Places list.
Okay, so in real numbers, this list can be expanded, and it would affect more properties than we currently have on the list.
Okay.
So there's unknowns for people who could be within these houses that are older than. Right. Okay.
Somehow we have to help people understand the criteria that's set for it to even get to that district.
No, this is just for houses on this list. This is not the district.
Yeah, going back to the original, when the original ordinance was adopted in 2001, they adopted it based on the 2001 Florida Master Site File Survey. So you are adopting an ordinance that is not based on an updated Florida Site File. And you're hearing, I think, the pushback to that, which is part of the discussion.
This is a little thing on 58482. I want to make sure that we're clear on this. It says that the HPP shall encourage reconstruction been deemed appropriate, and that means that a historic landmark is destroyed. And it says that it can be compatible with the original building. And I think we need to say that the demolished building there, because we don't really know. There's an unknown associated with the original building. I'm not sure. I've seen some photographs of some of the original buildings on Park Avenue, and I'm not sure we want to say original. We might just want to say the demolished building, and the point is you just want to replace it with what you have. And I think under incentives, this 58490, I have a lot of heartburn with incentives, by the way, I think we can discuss this in detail. And I just wanted to know, do we need to add an appeal? It says that the city may adopt at their discretion, and I'm hoping that we can adopt or repeal at our discretion.
Absolutely, that's the reason we put it in a resolution.
Right.
And you know, I just
want to be careful, because I don't want to hear Virgil Harris, we had it, and they were trying to take it away. So that was
so if you had, the city may adopt additional or repeal.
Right, adopt or not a big deal.
Existing.
I'd like to wrap up about 5 minutes.
I have the biggest one that's coming up right now.
Okay. 5 minutes.
Here's Greg.
Yeah, not in attorney time.
Right.
Okay.
To me, the most important thing we need to do is protect our home. Protect those 100 homes on that list. And give the residents who are interested an opportunity to talk about this. So for me, my question is, are we doing that with the patients? And that's my concern. I'm not sure we're protecting their homes. And I don't think we're protecting their homes. So this next discussion is about how the one thing that we have here that might incentivize protecting our family. I am going to go back and study the overlays that are being put in place in some cities. Park Avenue to me is the economic driver of this community. And I think most people appreciate that. Most residents appreciate that. That's different. That's different. And so I would like to look at those three things kind of separately. The districts, I want people to have fair opportunity to establish districts. Just fair. And if these aren't fair, then I want to make them fair. I don't want to make it easy, but I want to make it possible, and I want to make it inclusive. That's how I feel about the district. How I feel about the individual designated homes, I think we should incentivize to the extent that we can, either through facade grants or however we do it, those 100 key homes. But then we get to Park Avenue, and that's a totally different thing. When I look at on page 23, this is it's Division 6 tax exemption. This isn't the tax exemption that's for the renovation. This is clearly an ad valorem tax exemption. And right now, this is taken out of state statute. It's missing a few words, by the way, if you're trying to do the state statute, we put all the words in there. But right now, what this does is it says that if you are a commercial or a nonprofit piece of property in the city of Country Park, and you are on a national historic register, or you are on a local historic register, or you are individually listed, we are giving the opportunity for the city commission to enable a 50% ad valorem tax reduction. It has no specific period of time. And here's the deal, Greg, and this is why it's so important to me. Every piece of commercial property on Park Avenue is currently already in a national district.
This only applies to the contributing property, not every property within the district.
Well, it says that the property must be either listed in the National Register of Historic Places or must be designated as a historic property or be a contributing property to the historic district. So all of those properties that are on that street already meet this criteria.
I haven't done the Bank of America.
No, it's not true. It's
contributing. So that is. We can be the one of those.
Well,
I appreciate that number. versus that section.
Yes, but if that were done today, it's roughly $60,000.
But if it was done today, it wouldn't gain us anything.
Right, so that's exactly right.
That's the point.
Because they're already in there.
So here's what I asked Dan about to make sure it was legal. If we want to incentivize Park Avenue going on a local register, we can modify this particular offering and only allow that 50% tax rebate if they are listed on a local register. And that's something to think about, because I don't know how we are going to protect the most important historic asset we can, and that's Park Avenue. Anything beyond that, all this other discussion is very nice, but it's those 100 houses and Park Avenue that are the economic drivers for every piece of property in the Metro Park, and it's that historic ambiance. So that's what I'm searching for, is what do we do to really help in that regard? And certainly, if we want to do this, it should only be, I believe, for a local district. If we don't want to do it, I don't see any reason to reiterate a state statute in our land use code. We don't do that with other state statutes. So it either needs to come out of there, or we need to turn it into something that's going to help us in historic preservation.
And we have the other incentives in the resolution, so why have this one here and all the rest of them in the resolution?
Sorry. Well, the thing I want to talk about was the fact that we need to be careful of this language, because all the properties are in a district. So being in a district is enough.
Yeah,
we need to be careful that it's only contributing
properties.
So we need to be really careful that we know what we've got here, and that we get something back for doing something like this. And that was what I wasn't seeing, was any return on investment. And then when we get to the incentives that you have in the ordinance, the two things that were of concern to me, it says it's TOD, but I think it means TDRs, transfer development rights. Those development rights currently do not exist.
And
where would we take them to? Because we already went into our comp plan and allowed 6 to 8 stories at 250% floor in Fairbanks.
We talked a lot about the fact that the incentives need a lot of work. And
right. I just don't want to see it in there. So for me, I'm going
to want the TDR
incentives. Well, I'll tell you why. Not because I don't like TDR incentives. I'm fine with that. Except I know that in the comp plan, we already went to all those places that we thought could deal with the density, and that was the compromise in order to save the downtown area. We put in our comp plan the opportunity to put 250% bar and 6 stories out on Fairbanks. You know, so the places where the transfer of density made sense, we already gave them the opportunity.
But under TDR, I mean, you have an area that is a receiving area.
Absolutely.
That is defined.
And until that's defined, I wouldn't want to see this.
So
that's the problem. And then the last thing is the ad valorem. So those are just the two things that I need to understand the financial impact of. And for this one, the data that I would request is, I want to see where they're talking about transferring density to, where we think that's okay, where's the receiving end. And on the ad valorem, I need to understand the dollars.
Right, and we have the ad valorem as a, not just on Park Avenue, but the ad valorem could go in any district.
And you saw that you're not adopting them.
No,
they all say that the ones that have financial impact have to come back with policy established and appropriation.
But as soon as it gets there, as soon as we put it in black and white and put it in the ordinance or resolution, we adopt it, then people are going to be pushing for it.
Yeah,
and
sure,
as soon as they start. And so we really need to decide, is that something that's good for us? Where would we transfer that density to? And in my mind, I can see, I can anticipate where they want to transfer that density to, and I'm not sure that's in the best interest.
Okay. That's a good one. All right, I'll go ahead and close the meeting. Thank you for everyone. I do have some better understanding.
I was trying to kind of.
Finished?